Hi, I'm Alicia.
And I'm Stacy.
And we make Trashy Divorces, everybody's favorite good podcast about bad relationships.
Looking for something true crimey without the gore or the body count?
We've been churning out funny, feisty, feminist episodes since 2019. So if you're looking to put some scandalous stories told well into your ears this summer, check out Trashy Divorces, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Trust us, we've covered someone you love.
Or someone you love to hate.
Baseball is back. It's opening day in St. Louis, a civic holiday, unofficial. And that means that the best podcast in baseball is back. Sorry for the spring hibernation. It's been a doozy, but let's jump right in. I'm joined this week by Nathan Mills, and we're going to offer you a look at the 2026 Cardinals through one position. What position is that? Stay tuned. Cue the music. I gotta remember how to do this, Nathan. Hold on a second. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the best podcast in baseball, brought to you by Closet by Design of St. Louis. I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould, joined this week by editor Nathan Mills. Nathan, it is a tradition as old as time and just as silly. Happy New Year. That is what we say in the press box on opening day. It's a ball scribe habit that probably seems a little odd, but hey, Happy New Year.
I heard during the Yankees-Giants game just a few minutes ago, happy hitting season, boys. I like that.
Happy hitting season. Well, I don't know how to break this to you. The Cardinals, they're going to have a pitching season. They're going to have a defensive. They're going to have a catching season. Happy catching season.
The season kind of works in there, I think.
Yeah, happy catching season. The Cardinals may not have much hitting. That's the real question. They certainly are a lack of power. That is maybe one of the things that stands out from spring training. That and the obviously overall arching thing that, you know, in this, the 100th anniversary of the 1926 World Series championship, the one that started it all, the first of 11, the one that came against Babe Ruth on the Yankees, that put Lou Gehrig on deck just watching it happen as it ended. On the 100th anniversary of all of that, the Cardinals are going in a really new direction here. They are pivoting into a rebuild. They have slashed payroll. They are trying to sell fans while fans are still learning what channel the game are on. It's just what a fascinating time in Cardinal history, because so much of their history has been propulsive towards October. And this team is like, well, if we're ever going to get back there, we got to take a few steps back. And it comes at a time when revenues are fragile, the fan base is irritated. It's a really interesting kind of confluence of events for these Cardinals.
I think it's interesting too that I know we've kind of been heading this direction for a couple of years now, but to kind of officially take this tack, you know, 100 years, exactly 100 years after, you know, the run of kind of greatness started, right? And you said it, I think you've got a column coming out in the morning, probably at the same time as this podcast, if I had to guess. And you said it best, you know, the new Cardinal century is here. And yeah, you know, maybe it's going to start a little bit rockier than it did in 1926, but there's a foundation here that I think is really interesting. I think there's a lot of potential. It's just going to be a couple of years till we get to see it, certainly in the batter's box at least.
I want to tell the story of the beginning of the 2026 Cardinals through one position. I want to talk about left field. Certainly the most surprising decision there made after the team had left Florida and arrived in Springfield and they disclosed it to the group of us that was there. I was there. And they made the decision to keep Nelson Velasquez, their leading hitter, their leading home run guy, and their leading RBI guy from spring training. They decided to keep him in Memphis and instead go north with Nathan Church, which makes sense. He's their backup center fielder. And then Jose, what's that?
Great name. Nathan, fellow Nathan, so I'm always rooting for him.
Yeah, yeah. In the olden days of punny headlines, boy, man, we would have had some fun with that one. But the some would have had, yeah. Oh no, we'd have a lot of fun. And then infielders Jose Fermin and Thomas Tejesi are on the roster, and that completes it. It is a curious call for sure, because the team that began spring by saying they needed to add a right-handed hitting outfielder, and aware that they were looking for power some way, somehow from the outfield, got both of those things in Nelson Velasquez, and then said, no, we're good. No, we're all right. We'll go north with the infielders playing the outfield. What did you make of that decision from afar? Did you have a sense of, you know, certainly how good a spring Nelson Velasquez is, but did it come at all as a surprise to you?
No, not really. I mean, you know, I think that I think a couple of things can be true at the same time. The first to me is that it seemed very clear once I saw that move that this was a matter of keeping your 40 man together as best you can. They had to make a move to get Weatherholt on the 40 man roster, and that was kind of ready made with Newbar, you know, ready to hit the 60-day IL, right? But they didn't want to make another move, so it makes sense. You know, you don't want to risk losing a Fermin by passing him through waivers to send him to the minors. You don't want to, you know, have to create a roster spot with somebody else that you like. So they did what they had to do, and Marmol had, I think, said it kind of the right way after the move was announced, when he said, you know, go down there and prove it. You know, force our hand, make us bring you back here. You know, the reality is, and this is kind of the second part of why I wasn't surprised, is Nelson Velasquez can be a very good hitter, but at the major league level, he's not had sustained success. And so I think it's fair to take a look at him at AAA against pitchers who are trying to get him out, you know, as opposed to maybe working on a pitch or something like that.
If his adjustments of spring are for real, he had 4 strikeouts and 43 at bats, as many strikeouts as walk. This is a guy who has had a 28, 29, almost 30% strikeout rate in the majors. And look, spring is what spring is, and these pitchers are not necessarily trying to get him out, at least not until later in spring. They are working on stuff, as they say, and he could take advantage of it. He certainly came in ahead of it. I do think that it's really interesting, though, that the Cardinals made such a big deal of holding on to what they had on the 40 man when, you know, I mean, it's not that difficult to find a spot. You know, you have some redundancies there. And one of the things you don't have on that roster per se is power. Whereas Nathan Church is, you know, a left-handed bat who plays center field. You got, you know, that kind of like Brian Torres. I mean, if you wanted to make room, you could. Some of this does come down to the fact that they wanted to keep their Rule 5 pick in Matt Bouchard, and he did well, and he earned it and everything. So you want to keep that in mind. I mean, otherwise you might have seen Scott Blewett on the roster just taking that spot because of his uptick in velocity and really what he did there. But I do think that it's somewhat an explanation of convenience to say that they wanted to hold on to all their players, because it's not like we're going to see all these players. It's not like they even factor into the depth unless there's an injury. And it certainly isn't like there hasn't been some squeeze from below on a guy like Brian Torres, who's 28, who, you know, was added to the 40 man because it made sense at the time, because they didn't know what trades were going to happen, what direction they were going to go. But certainly Nathan Church has put himself in ahead of Torres on the depth chart. And Nelson Velasquez's power puts him ahead of everybody. I really think it invites a question on, like, how important is power to this Cardinals team? And then the corollary to that would be, how important should power be to this Cardinals team?
Yeah, I find myself wanting, you know, first of all, it has kind of felt like it's not been, power has not been important to the, not just the team, but the franchise at large. I mean, you know, it's not like there's been power in the immediate past, right?
Only 220 home run hitters last year returning. You know, you have Joshua Baez, who was 20-50 in the minors, 20 home runs, 50 stolen bases. And then you had Ivan Herrera, who had 20 home runs total, 19 in the majors, and then one there in the minors.
Well, it's not like there's power coming, right? Like, I mean, you mentioned Baez, but that's one guy. There's not a tree of 20 or 30 home run guys coming. So right. It kind of seems like it's not been a priority for a while. The other thing I would say is that maybe it doesn't need to be right now. I mean, you know, the Cardinals have kind of set this, I don't want to say standard because it kind of feels like, you know, this is just who we are now, but I've kind of tried to set the expectation that like, we're not necessarily out to win 162 ball games this year. We're out to make progress and we're out to win ball games, but there are times where we may lose ball games, you know, and be okay with the progress that we've made in that time. And so I think maybe power is just not a huge concern. You know, to your point, I think there are guys on the 40 I probably would have swapped out for Velasquez, but that's why they don't pay me the big bucks.
They didn't really ask. Well, I mean, I guess they did ask our opinion, or they did ask my opinion, but they didn't really act on it. It was more of a challenge of what would you do? I think there is a real message in this action also being said to the style of team that they want. You know, Velasquez has swing and miss in his game. He has power payoff. They really want to be a pesky, feisty, relentless, they say exhausting offense. I would flip that and say they need to be an exhaustive offense, meaning they really need to use every trick, every tool, every skill in their bag to score runs. You know, I have that long ago, Nathan, a little origin story. Long ago, I spent some time, way more time than I should have, yellow legal pad. And I was like, I'm going to try to find a way to put together a metric based on 90 feet. You know, every 90 feet that a hitter takes is a point. Every 90 feet that a pitcher stops somebody from taking is a point. All this stuff, you know, just like break the game down into 90 feet segments. Because I thought that was like a really interesting way to kind of look at both production and defense. Who stops someone from taking 90 feet? So an outfield assist, you stopped them. That's a minus one, right? You know, great defensive play, you robbed a hit. That's a minus 90. So example like that. A double, 180, you know, simple enough, right? You know, go first to third on a single. That's a plus 90 because you're doing more than just taking a base. I mean, this is a team that is going to have to measure its offense in 90 feet, not in 365, 410, 395, not in shots over the wall, not in Statcast measurements, but in literally 90 feet and 90 feet that they take either via walk or single or first to third or Victor Scott, the second stolen base. These are all the things that they're going to have to measure their offense in. Call it small ball, call it whitey ball, call it whatever you want. But the only way that they're going to have any sort of semblance of offense, it sure seems like they cannot rely on the power to just magically manifest in the hitters that they need it from. They're going to have to get creative. And I sure think these rosters, this roster move, particularly when you think about Fermin's contact rate, you think about what Sujacy does, double up, you know, jolt, a guy who really has command of the strike zone. I think it really speaks to the kind of offense they expect to have, or maybe a better way to put that is the kind of offense they expect they need to have.
It's interesting that you say that too, particularly through the lens of left field as mm-hmm. Lars Nootbaar. You know, that's who he is to a T, scrappy, take everything he can get, fight for every 90 feet. And now that he has two healthy feet, perhaps it'll be easier him to get those 90 feet, you know?
Yeah. Well, Nathan Church fits into that too. You're going to see him starting in left field. Oliver Marmol brought up the fact that you might see Jordan Walker get a couple days off a week. And certainly Church will factor into that because of his arm and because of how well he can play the field. And that's his game too. You know, that's his brand of baseball. He's not going to put the ball over the wall. He and Sujacy and some of these guys, they might put the ball off the wall, but they're, you know, as far as power goes, they're just not going to have a very simplified offense where it's like, okay, go bomb. Now, you know, the counter to that is they give up a 3-run homer. Now you're looking at having to stack a whole lot of hits to catch up. They give up 2 home runs, you know, and the probability just all of a sudden really works against them. The notion of like a walk and a bloop and a blast is 2 runs, right? That's cool. But if you have a 90 feet offense, then you need to like have, you know, walk to stack upon a single to then get another single And the probability of this happening just vanishes, especially in the modern game where the bullpen's just coming at you at, you know, like a blowtorch. So I think it's a really interesting idea. I don't know how well it is going to work, but here's another aspect to it is, could it work as far as being entertaining? Might it be an entertaining style of offense that connects with the fans in a way that they need to?
I don't know that it'll immediately be that way. You know, I mean, certainly opening day will be what opening day always is, but I don't know that it will immediately be that way. But I do think that, yeah, eventually this is going to be a team that frustrates at times, but it's going to be a team that, you know, every now and then you're going to go, oh, wow, you know, there's enough talent there, pop or no pop, there's enough talent there that they're going to surprise some people. Maybe not in the standings, you know, maybe not in the final stats, but you're going to see some plays, you're going to see some glimpses where you're going to go, okay, this guy puts it together, he's really going to be something. You know, we really have a future around, you know, one of these guys, two of these guys, whatever it is. So, yeah, I mean, I think there's some excitement there. And I think the Cardinals are kind of, you know, in a Cardinal way a little bit, kind of trying to build on that excitement, kind of trying to, you know, make a brand of it a little bit, you know, sort of a let the kids play sort of setup.
Yeah. Let's take a quick little tangent from the left field kind of prism to look at the season. And I do want to tell you a little bit about like the hitters who stood out in spring. You know, when you talk about like just the players who had strong springs, I think the list starts with JJ Weatherholt. There were times when scouts said he's already the best hitter on the team. He might be the best player on the field. Hit only 212, but man, what a misleading 212 for Grapefruit League games. Again, don't put a whole lot of stock in the actual numbers of spring, but the way he, you know, the walks he took, the charges he put in balls, the command he had at the plate, very impressive. Hard to overlook Josh Baez. At one point in time, word had it that he hit home runs in 9 consecutive games. That's nuts. He hit a home run in his final 3 Grapefruit League games. Then he goes to the backfield and hit home run in his first 5 games back there. I do know of the first 2. I asked him about it. He went backside, meaning opposite field, home run the first game down there, then pulled a home run the next game. I asked him about those. Then apparently he had 3 more home runs in the next 3 days. Then he comes over to the breakout game and hit a home run there. I think that is where the streak ended. But goodness, what a streak. 9 consecutive games with a home run. And I mean, he was very impressive as far as just his pitch selection, his poise at the plate, just a lot. You know, he had that big challenge, back-to-back challenges that kind of set up everything, and then he went on a real good big hot tear. I think he was a very strong hitter. So Weatherholt, Baez, they stood out. 2 more to tell you about. Alec Burleson had just such a veteran spring, just really a remarkable kind of veteran spring. You know, like you'd expect a guy who'd been around twice as long as he had to have, where he made adjustments. He was working through them in the first half of spring, was not jarred from them, was not bumped off track by early struggles or early results, just kept going, got his timing, and then took off. I mean, he really finished strong, enters this season very much in a good place, it seems. You always wonder where that, how that translates, but his timing got there and then the hits followed, and just a very veteran spring. The other guy is Nolan Gorman. Nolan Gorman had a strong spring. Lots of contact, not a whole lot of strikeouts, but also not giving up any of that kind of thump that he has. And I'll tell you what, you know, again, spring training, take it with a grain of salt, but you can tell when a guy is in command of an at bat and when he's on defensive. And there was a point in time somewhere about, you know, with 12, 13, 14 days to go, where maybe about a fortnight to go, where Nolan Gorman would stand in that box and he was in command of that at bat. There was just, he looked like a guy who was prepared to hit, not waiting to hit, if that makes sense. We talked about it and we referenced it in the press box and talked to the hitting coach and even Nolan about it too, is there just seemed like to be a command in his presence in the box, that, you know, he wasn't wondering what they were going to throw at him. He was confident that he could go to it and really aware of where his zone was. So those four guys stand out. And while we're talking about power, you know, I mean, if the Cardinals are going to have any, you got to figure Nolan Gorman's going to provide it. Do you have a hitter that you're looking forward to seeing that you think might have this breakout year, might have a year that you don't quite expect?
I don't know that it would be necessarily from a power perspective, but I would really love to see what Mason Wynn does this season. He had a pretty good rookie season down last year. And so I'd love to see him bounce back this season. Out of the four guys you mentioned, Burleson's the one I've got my eye on. You know, veteran start, and he's going to be the kind of guy who, you know, we talk about leadership. We talk about, you know, who do you guys look to, not just, you know, vocal presence in the clubhouse, but on the field, like providing an example of how you play the ball game. Burleson's going to be one of those guys, and, you know, having that kind of approach and being that guy and, you know, I don't know if you can call it a breakout for him, right, after a Silver Slugger season, but, you know, taking that next and kind of being the guy, you know, I think can be a really huge deal, not just for him, but for the Cardinals' chances in this rebuild.
Yeah, so a strong spring. We'll see. I mean, you know, I think, you know, Ivan Herrera is another guy who could provide power. They think he might have the best kind of all-around offensive season. But, you know, you look at the standout guys who, you know, you kind of think, okay, these are the best hitters in the lineup. It's Burleson, it's Herrera, and then it might be Weatherholt with the other guys just on the, you know, there to challenge. What's your read on Jordan Walker from afar?
I got to tell you, I don't know what to make of Jordan Walker. I mean, you know, he kind of will put something together for a minute and look really good, maybe in AAA, and then he'll come back up and it's gone. I don't know what, you know, how things don't stick or don't translate, or, you know, that's tough. It can be different for every guy, and obviously I'm not in those situations. Personally, my thought is I don't understand why the Cardinals are giving him another chance. I know he's got a lot of prospect pedigree and a lot of hopes pinned on him, but the experiment feels like it's failed to me, and that feels like a spot where you maybe could have taken a shot at putting Nelson Velasquez on the roster.
That's interesting. I mean, it speaks to what I think it still speaks to what they think he could be,
yeah,
and are worried about him being that somewhere else, because it's such a rare talent to have power. And yet, you know, when they had a chance to add even the potential of some, you're right, they didn't. Power is a really interesting conversation with this team, because they have they've invested so much in having Jordan Walker, you know, become a power hitter or add power to his game, even at the expense of maybe hitting for a high average when he was younger, you know, because they knew he had such really different and standout talent there, but it just hasn't happened. And it hasn't happened consistently. And yet, you know, then you have a guy who has shown flickers of power, has more home runs per at bat than anybody else on this team, is the only guy in the organization who had 30 home runs as a pro this past year, but they don't make the move for him. So you're right. I mean, it is an interesting thing. It's a big bet. It also speaks to where Walker is in the career cycle at the moment. You know, one option remaining. Put him in AAA, he's out of options. So that's the year. He can do this year, but beyond that, he's out. So if it doesn't work out and you try to trade him, then even the team that acquires him is out. They can't put him in the minors. So, you know, that changes both his fit for the Cardinals, but also more his appeal for another team. And then, you know, he's about to, as hot as this sounds, he's about to hit arbitration and make some, you know, significant more money. He's not going to cash in unless he has a power platform year, but still, that's, you know, money. And this is a team that is really trying to find its core so that it can lock up its core. And you could see how when a guy like that starts making more money, then the trade would happen. And they'd have to, you know, kind of watch to see if he goes elsewhere and starts cranking out the doubles and the home runs that they thought he would do here. I don't know. They have a lot, they have not only a lot invested in him as far as time and money, they also have a lot of hope invested in him because they so need a power guy like that to come out of their farm system.
Well, since you mentioned it, I have wondered if the reason he's still the starting right fielder is largely because of that. Not necessarily the hope, but just I don't want to say fear, but you know, this could be another outfielder who goes somewhere else and figures it out with a for a franchise with a relatively long history of position players going somewhere else and figuring it out. You know, there's maybe a, I don't know if argument to be made is the right way to say it, but you know, there's, you could say this is part of the last, you know, front office, the last administration, and maybe you don't tie yourself to that if that happens. But you know, if you need power, go get some power. And Velasquez seemed like the fit. I mean, it makes total sense to me what Marmol said. You know, go down there, force our hand, make us bring you back. And that makes sense to me. I mean, this is a guy who's been in the majors before. This isn't a Cardinals prospect, and he's been streaky at best. He's not had prolonged success. So, you know, I understand wanting to see him earn it against, you know, game against pitchers in games that count rather than in spring training. So I understand that logic. But yeah, just there seemed like a couple of places where you could have made the room and found that out for yourself. You know, worst case scenario, you move on. You know, I mean, it's a minor league deal. There's very little lost in that kind of scenario other than a little time and money.
You touched on something that I would like to ask you how you feel about that. Do you think that Heim Bloom would get a pass for moving on from Jordan Walker because he's new, or if Jordan Walker goes and excels elsewhere, would he have to wear it?
No, I think he still wears it. I mean, I think realistically it's not his to wear, but I think he still wears it. I mean, that's, you know, that's the business, you know, I mean, you know how it is. It doesn't really matter who made the decisions. It doesn't really matter who made the moves. Whoever's in charge is the boss, and whoever's in charge is the one who takes the heat. And it kind of sounds like in just the things that I've heard him say, since taking the job, that he's aware of that and prepared for that. I mean, he took a lot of heat in Boston after the Mookie Betts trade, so he's dealt with it before, and maybe in a tougher market in terms of fan base than the one he's in currently, you know. So, I mean, I don't think that'll be a problem.
We go back to left field for our look at the 2026 Cardinals for the move that the Cardinals made regarding their expected left fielder, and that is Lars Nootbaar, who they'd like to see in left field start a majority of the games, but he's got to get healthy first. And they did put somewhat of a time stamp on his return, which would be May 24th at the earliest, because they put him on the 60-day injured list. Lars is down in Florida running. He will join the team for opening day and then go back to Florida, where they have all the tech and the support and everything to continue with his rehab. It is a significant step, sorry for the pun, that he is running. But what they want to do is then recreate spring training for him. He did not have a traditional spring training, obviously, because he wasn't running. So they want to create spring training for him, which is essentially looks like 5 weeks, 6 weeks. And so you are already looking at the outside of that 60 days. You know, that puts him back likely, you know, they hope in late May. But it's, the goal is to have him full speed at that point and healthy for the first time in years. So that's what that roster move tells us about Lars Nootbaar availability. It also says there's plenty of time for competition to be had in left field. It will be interesting, and this is my question for you, Nathan. It will be interesting to see if someone makes it difficult on the Cardinals to then just make Lars Nootbaar the left fielder when he's healthy. What do you think the possibilities of that are? What do you think the possibilities are that when Lars Nootbaar returns from the injured list, it's actually a question whether he's the starting left fielder?
Slim, very slim odds. I mean, listen, I like Sajacy, I like Fermin, and I like Velasquez, certainly if he's figured it out. But, this is a Cardinals guy. I think the franchise doesn't really treat guys like that in that situation. I think he'll definitely come back and have a job waiting for him. You know, whether he holds on to that job, I don't know, but he'll definitely have a job waiting for him. You know, the other thing, too, is, Nootbaar is one of those guys who's on the edge of when the Cardinals think their window might reopen. Right. So he's a trade candidate at some point, mm-hmm. whether it's this season, next season, certainly he's got to come back and play well, prove his health, kind of show he's a viable trade asset again. But he's likely a trade asset at some point. So, I don't think realistically they put him on the bench for someone else unless, Velasquez comes up and indeed does have an 1100 OPS. But that seems unlikely. But, stranger things have happened.
Well, and if that happens, then there's always right field. If Lars, if Jordan Walker isn't performing, then Lars can play right and they could see what happens there. So it's more of a two-pronged attack there for who is taking aim at Lars Nootbaar's playing time. It's both the guys in left field who have an opportunity to make their case, and then it's the guy in right field who has to hold on to his. And we'll see as Lars progresses, but it sure seems in some way, somehow, there's going to be a starting job for Lars. It's just a matter of whose he takes at that point in time, unless the outfield's producing at a clip that they haven't for years. The reason for putting Lars Nootbaar on the 60-day injured list is J.J. Weatherholt. It clears a spot out for J.J. Weatherholt, the Cardinals' top prospect, the National League Rookie of the Year candidate, who will be in the lineup opening day, batting, likely leadoff, definitely playing second. I am fascinated. I told Oliver Marmol this. I said, go ahead, bat him leadoff. Like, make the story for us. Just give us the symbolism of y'all starting this season, this rebuild, this new era, this all of it, with your top prospect making the team, and not only making the team, but taking the first at bat of the season. Would not be a surprise. Probably would not be jarring for him. He's got a whole lot of poise. Very impressive young man. Very balanced hitter. He's going to struggle because everybody does. But I don't think anybody would be surprised if he goes out and is among the best rookies and maybe even takes aim at getting the Cardinals that, prospect incentive pick, prospect promotion incentive pick by winning the Rookie of the Year award. That would not be a shock to anybody. And the Cardinals made the move to, with the roster to make that happen. I do think, Nathan, let me hear before I present my conclusion to you about the power of left field as a way to look at the 2026 Cardinals. Were you at all, as our editor, as of someone who read all of our copy, were you at all surprised that J.J. Weatherholt made the opening day roster?
No,
I've been okay. Targeting. Woo, there were some think pieces about how they were going to hold him back, and it was like, what are you watching? What are we watching?
No chance. No chance that was ever going to happen. No. It was not just obvious from the reporting. I mean, I think the things that they said made it very obvious. They were kind of open about we're gonna give him a chance and let him earn a spot, in which a lot of teams say that, but you can kind of tell the difference between teams that say that and teams that mean it, and they meant it, and I think that's great. You mentioned opening day and hitting leadoff. I mean, imagine that moment, as you're kicking off a reset here, a rebuild, I guess. Bottom of the first, out walks your top prospect, standing ovation.
How about that? Yeah, the standing ovation that is normally reserved for former Cardinals greets a future Cardinal. Or the Cardinals' future, I should say, a present Cardinal.
Listen, here's how it's going to happen. I'm telling you, it's going to be he's going to walk out. He's going to get a standing ovation, tip his cap, good at bat, C&I single, another standing ovation at first base. That's my prediction.
That is a C&I single. You even went that detailed. Not a rope to left center field. Rounds nope. first. Nope. No. Seeing eye nope. single. All right.
Seeing eye single. Okay.
It passed the diving infielder to bring some drama to it.
Probably not diving. Probably just out, you know, stretching. You know, he's kind of
okay.
running.
All right. Yeah. All right. So got good pace to it. So didn't give the infielder hope of catching it, but you know.
Yeah. No. Put a little zip on it.
Okay. Yeah. Put a little salt. Okay. You know, I think it's interesting that one of the big topics and one of the really the biggest questions about the Cardinals is when are they going to contend again? And there's no real like date that they're putting on it. There's obviously the potential of a lockout in 2027. There's the unknown there. You know, there's the unknown of the TV deal. There's the unknown of how fans will react to this. Could they see another plummet in, you know, they've lost 1 million ticket sales in the last, 2 years. That's a sizable chunk of revenue, however you want to slice it. If you want to attach $20 per ticket to how much they take, how much revenue they get, that's 20 million. And it's more than that. It's 40 million. You know, or more. And that's not even taking into account the peripheral stuff. So it's a sizable chunk of their revenue. So will that grow again, or will they have to spend on the payroll to get people to come back? All of those are real and pressing questions. I think it's interesting what their actions say about when they think their next timetable to win could be, Nathan. You think about buying another year of control of JJ Weatherholt, right? If you don't expect to contend this year and you're already taking a bruising because of that, what's another few weeks, JJ Weatherholt in AAA, to get another full year of control, you know, closer to your contention, which would be closer to when you think you might be contending again, unless you think you're going to be contending before that time, before that 2030, when he becomes arbitration eligible, if you buy that extra year. If you think you're going to be contending earlier than that, if you think your window of contention is going to open or your window of spending is going to open earlier than that, and you think, you know, you want to do prime JJ Weatherholt, then you get him going now. And you know what else you do? You start acquiring pitchers who are closer to the majors, like a Richard Fitz or a Hunter Dobbins. I wonder if Bloom might be telegraphing a little bit when he wants that window, or when ownership wants that window to open, and that it is coming out of whatever 2027 brings. And it is then coming into what would be JJ Weatherholt's third year, what would be Richard Fitz's potentially third or second year, what would be Quinn Matthews' second year, what could be Liam Doyle's first year, what could be Tanner Franklin's first full year, or maybe even second full year. I mean, you start lining up the prospects and lining up the acquisitions, and then most of all, lining up their decisions. And you start to see the outline of at least when they think they're going to contend.
Well, don't forget that prospect promotion incentive pick either. I mean, I think, you know, Weatherholt is already a betting favorite, among the betting favorites for NL Rookie of the Year. If he, you know, factors in, you know, wins that award, factors into MVP voting, the Cardinals get another pick, a high pick, you know, and I think they've shown very clearly in the last 8 months, 12 months, that they value those picks and having as many as high as they possibly can. So, I mean, I think that was definitely a factor, too, in getting Weatherholt up this early. But, you know, in terms of the window, you know, I think, you know, Hockman in our special section, you know, previewing the Cardinals season, Ben Hockman had a column about 2028. What could the lineup look like? You know, does the window open by 2028? I don't know. You know, if everything went perfectly this year and we get close to a full season next year and everything goes perfectly, yeah, I could see that happening, you know. So, yeah, I mean, I think I don't know if, telegraphing where they want the window to open, but certainly where they think it could open if the bets that they've made pay out.
Yeah, I think the interest in pitching that's a lot closer, the choice with other, I think there's something there. You know, I think at least I'm a big fan of reading actions because they have ramifications as opposed to statements, which they are reluctant to make because they're promises, or they act as their promises or something like that. But I do think that they're lining up for, and you know, while the the reduction in spending is dramatic. Like, it's seriously dramatic this year. But it also creates a place to, with a new CBA and the potential of some of these guys opting out, you could see how they could augment their core once they see it and move forward with a pretty strong group. Is it all here in place now? No, this is not the roster that is the Cardinals' next contender, but the beginnings of it are, and it might be a little bit closer to at least being able to contend with help than to just waiting around and idling and hoping the lightning strikes. And I think the Weatherholt promotion suggests that, like, you know, they could have taken the PR bruising. They could have, you know, grinned and said, you know, he needs more time in AAA, or he didn't get enough at bats and all that. And you're right, the draft pick's huge. But there's no guarantee on that. And there is a guarantee of that extra year if you hold him back, unless he goes and wins it anyway, and then he gets the full year of service time. But that's even, you know, that's, you're playing the odds. If you want to play the sure thing, you go, well, you get another year of control, because that might actually be the time when you're contending. This suggests to me that they don't feel they're closer to contending than they are, but they know that they need to get there. And maybe that's the best way to put it, Nathan, is that they've offered us a window into their deadline for contention by saying they're not going to linger until, you know, Weatherholt is arbitration 2 and they're looking to trade him like Brendan Donovan. Right. Well, they're not going to get into that cycle. So maybe that's the better way to look at it, is that they've set a deadline for their contention.
Yeah. And, you know, to some degree, maybe they've had to. You know, we've talked about the reduction in spending and in revenue. You know, part of that is ticket sales, you know, have cratered the last couple of years. What better way to sell some tickets with a team that may not be very good than having your hottest young prospect, hitting prospect, in a good long while make his debut on opening day? You know, I mean, that says you're serious about, you know, letting the kids play, as they say. It shows you're serious about letting your talent play, you know, letting your talent play out and grow on the field rather than, you know, get cute, I think was the phrase that Chaim Bloom used. Get cute with their service, get cute with their contracts.
He told me that in his office there at Jupiter. We were talking there late one night after a night game, and he said, you don't want to get too cute. He also said, listen to the game. It'll tell you what to do.
I think not getting too cute is important, because, you know, if Weatherholt works out like the Cardinals, you know, hope, and like fans hope, this is a guy that maybe in a handful of years you want to extend, you know, and he's going to remember that you called him up instead of messing with the service time.
Great call. All right. Well, that's our look at the 2026 Cardinals through left field. Both their choice as to who plays left field, their choice of what kind of hitter to have out in left field, and what that says about the style of game they're played, their decision to put Lars Nootbaar, their preferred left fielder, on the 60-day IL, and what doing that did to open up a spot for Weatherholt, and what that tells us about their window to contend. All of that just by looking at one position, Nathan. I think we did well here.
I think we did better than well. We got an A+, man. A++. Yep.
All right, we had a solid 70 podcast on the scout scale.
I like that. Yeah.
Do you want to bump it up to 80? Let's have some fun. You want to make fun of my predictions?
Yeah, let's do that. Yeah. I love making fun of everything and anyone.
All right, we have to do predictions for the season preview section in the Post Dispatch. They are inevitably wrong the moment they are printed. My American League predictions: to win the Central, the Tigers; to win the West, the Seattle Mariners; to win the East, the Toronto Blue Jays. My wild card picks are the Orioles, the Yankees, and the Show Me State Royals, not yet the Kansas Royals. And my pick to win the American League pennant is the Seattle Mariners. Do you hear anything in that group that makes you go, huh?
No, I don't know about the Orioles, man. It's like, so much talent, so much young talent, and then last year had some injury troubles and then had some record troubles, right? Standings troubles.
Yeah.
Bring in a couple of big names, so maybe they could be up there, you know?
I think they spent to fortify. You know, there's a recipe there for the Cardinals to follow.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I could see, you know, especially, you know, they started that core with a hot young catcher. So, yeah, that definitely sounds like
a middle infielder or two.
The only one, I'll tell you what, the only one I would take issue, Derek, is Seattle in the World Series. I think I would take Detroit if it were me.
All right. All right. Little your team school for that, you know.
I like the pitch there in Detroit. Yeah, like quite a bit.
20 years after he made his World Series debut against the Cardinals, Verlander gets his chance, right? Gets to try to bring a trophy to Detroit. What a finish that would be. Though I don't think he's really going to be finished, but man, that would be quite an ending for his career. So here's my National League picks, Nathan. What's up?
Oh, it's just, it'll still be a nice moment for Verlander, but yeah, go ahead.
It would be. All right, National League. My Central, the Cubs. My pick for the West, the Dodgers. My pick for the East, the Phillies. Wild cards, Diamondbacks, Mets, and Pittsburgh Pirates. My pennant winner, the Phillies, and the Mariners win the World Series.
You're buying into those.
Go ahead.
Pirates, sorry. No.
I'm not so much buying into the Pirates as like buying out of the rest of the NL Central.
Okay. I can buy that. You're not interested in like the Braves or the Giants or.
Well, the Braves have recently offered you a contract to pitch, so I'm a little concerned. No offense,
buddy. With my shoulder, they don't even want me. I mean, that's.
They're scrambling.
I'd be in the same boat as the rest of the pitchers. I would instantly be on the IL. They wouldn't want me, you know.
All right. Well, at least you'd fit the theme. They're struggling. Well,
I would fit in. I'm a little bigger than most of their pitchers, I think, but. The only umbrage I take, I think, is Seattle. You know, I think I'm not really in on Pittsburgh, really, but you know, you're right. The National League is not particularly strong. Somebody will limp in with, you know, 83 wins.
Leave the Padres off, and I did put the Diamondbacks on. I think the Diamondbacks are sneaky good.
I agree, and you know, the Padres just got. Selected Walker Buehler today, so they're definitely going to make a run.
Oh yeah, you know, that's going to happen.
Maybe you should reconsider the picks there. But no, the only one I really take umbrage with is Seattle again.
Why are you down on Seattle? Are you buying into the drama?
No, I'm not really buying into the drama so much. I kind of think they might be cursed.
Well, geez, okay, that's a good turn.
Well, I mean, you know, they had the best season of all time, right? Couldn't win a World Series, you know, didn't get back for a long time. Like, maybe they break the curse. Maybe this is the year, but, like, I don't know.
Hey, man, a Cal Raleigh spurned, you know, I mean, what's a guy got to do to play for Team USA? He goes out there, he's a switch hitter, he's won a platinum glove, he's hit 60 home runs, and he doesn't get to take a swing in the championship game of the WBC. That is a feisty guy. I wouldn't be surprised if the next WBC comes around and he's like, you know what? I am the player manager. I'm not letting that happen again. How many home runs does he have to hit to be the player manager? The 80?
I mean, listen,
my rule of thumb, and this is the Pirates, is when it comes to predictions, follow the pitching. Everything else, you know, is just you don't know how that's going to go. You know that the Rockies are going to score a lot of runs. You know that the Brewers are going to play good defense. That's fine. But follow the pitching. And so I follow the pitching, and that's where I ended up.
I can buy that. I took Paul Skenes number one in a fantasy draft this weekend. So
There you go.
I could get behind that. I wouldn't be upset with it.
Thanks for the invite to be part of the league, man.
Listen, if you want to be in a league, you're welcome. But I have to tell you right now that nobody I work with could ever be in this league because I would get fired immediately.
Oh, you just said that on a podcast.
Yeah, I know, but nobody's actually in the league, so I'm safe, you know.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, good luck with that league. I hope it goes well. Who'd you take second?
I wouldn't actually get fired. It's just a fantasy baseball league. The names, team names just get a little inappropriate. That's all.
Ah, gotcha.
You know, the puns of the players. Names.
Yeah. Say no more. Say no more.
Yeah, I gotcha.
Yeah. It's, you didn't draft Nathan Church, did you?
I did not. And in fact, my team name does not even include a player's name. I used a stat.
Oh, all right. Well, I won't guess what stat it is.
So thank you.
Maybe that'll be something you reveal in the season finale.
No, that would be that BBIB. Would be, if I tell the name, that's probably no. I don't want to do that. Okay. I've already said too much. Like, I felt good about it.
I just was setting up.
You said it on a podcast, guy. Now I feel like, oh great, now I am actually going to get fired.
I just was trying to set up a tease to keep people listening throughout the rest of the season, because we will have the best podcast in baseball throughout the season. My apologies for having some odd things happen during spring training. I'll be honest, I had multiple interviews set up for the podcast and just got, I don't know how to put it, just they didn't show up. They said they'd do it and then didn't respond. And when the schedule at spring is kind of like a clock, right? Like, or like a Swiss clock, it has to all kind of mesh or else it all goes awry. Especially this spring with some of the things going on with deadlines and everything like that. But you know, the best podcast in baseball will be more consistent during the season, because the schedule resumes a little bit and I've learned my lesson a little bit about who to book as guests. So I will do better. Nathan will appear plenty. We have constant Cardinals coverage per you. What's that?
Assuming I'm not fired from my fantasy baseball team, though.
Right. Assuming the name of his fantasy team is not discovered now as the sleuths take hunt for it. But we'll have the constant Cardinals coverage of opening day. Columbus Lynn Worthy and Benjamin Hockman will be out there at the ballpark. We'll also have all the coverage from Daniel Guerrero and myself. We also, if you have listened this far, you will learn shortly about a special promotion that we are doing for Cardinals, for the start of the Cardinals season, for a subscription of the Post-Dispatch. This is very exciting. If some of you out there have been wondering or hesitant about how to subscribe because of the cost of it, I have good news coming your way. We are going to do a subscription promotion related to the start of the Cardinals season. I will have more information about it on social media on opening day. So if you are listening to this on opening day, and I would imagine most of you are, because this is going to post on the eve of opening day, look to my social media page. There at Twitter, it's at @dgould or X. It will be elsewhere too. Benjamin Hockman will have information about it. If you're a TikToker, look for Hockman and me. We'll have information about it. This is a promotion that you don't want to miss. We're all very excited about it. It is going to come with even more expanded coverage with some ideas about what we're going to do there, some plans to increase our already huge coverage. No one invests as much time, resources, as the Post-Dispatch does in covering the Cardinals, and that is only going to continue, and now we're going to offer it at a very competitive price. So I'm looking forward to it, Nathan. This is an exciting thing that we're going to do. And we are also going to start by celebrating opening day by making our game coverage available to everybody outside the paywall. Just the game coverage. The game coverage on opening day, it's a gift to you, to the readers, to all the fans out there on opening day. It's a holiday. So what we wanted to do was give that coverage to everybody to read, to kind of get this season started. And then we wanted to offer the reduced rate, the reduced price for subscriptions. I'll have more information about that in the next Best Podcast in Baseball, but do look for it on social media channels.
Yeah, I'm really excited about it. You know, I wish that I got an opening day present, you know, just like, here's your gift for opening day. But I just have to work like really hard, actually. You too, for that matter. Like I'm speaking to the choir here, you know.
No, it's the easiest day of the year, man.
Well, you're crazy, brother. It's tough for me. That's all I know. I don't know what your job looks like on your end, but it is tough on my end.
I type fast and a lot. That's what my job is.
Yeah, but I read slow, and my job is to read. It's terrible.
Yeah, well, I should probably read, but I just type and send.
I think that's
smart. Type fast and send.
Listen, deadlines are only going to get earlier and earlier and earlier. You might as well.
Yeah, no, you're right. In fact, I need to go meet one right now. they're constant. They are constant. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to it. I'm very excited. It's a new year. It's a very new direction for the Cardinals. And I'm eager to see where this goes, but we will have blanket coverage of it. And I think we're going to do a really good job to make it more accessible to people who want to subscribe. So that's exciting. I look forward to it. I look forward to hearing from readers. And as always, I look forward to listening or to hearing from listeners. The best podcast in baseball exists only because of the community of listeners that have grown up around it. We are deep into our 14th season of BPIB. It's brought to you every week by Closet by Design of St. Louis. You can find it wherever you get your podcasts. You can find it on stltoday.com along with the aforementioned Constant Cardinals coverage. Please go to the iTunes and subscribe to the best podcast in baseball. You can rate and review it there and get back to me on what you'd like to hear this season. Good response to the Thomas Sagacy interview, so I'll keep that in mind. Probably even better response to this Nathan Mills conversation, so I'll keep that in mind. And away we go. Nathan, let's close it here. What do we say in the press box on this day every year?
God dang it.
Man, it was only an hour ago.
Happy New Year. Happy New Year. My brain went straight to Happy Hitting Day, boys. That's Happy Hitting.
Happy Catching Season, kids.
I can't. I'm sorry.
It's okay. Happy New Year. Happy New Year. Yeah, no aura. No aura, as the kids say.
Yeah, I'm the anti-David Ortiz.
No aura. Yeah, no, that does. Yeah. No. Happy Catching Season, Nathan.
Yeah, happy catching season, Derek. I like that.
Hi, I'm Alicia.
And I'm Stacy.
And we make Trashy Divorces, everybody's favorite good podcast about bad relationships.
Looking for something true crimey without the gore or the body count?
We've been churning out funny, feisty, feminist episodes since 2019. So if you're looking to put some scandalous stories told well into your ears this summer, check out Trashy Divorces. Wherever you listen to podcasts.
Trust us, we've covered someone you love.
Or someone you love to hate.